Welcome, everybody, to the Hammer and Rails podcast. I am your host, Andrew Ledman.
And I'm Casey Bartley.
And this week on the show, we have a special guest with us. You know him from the Hammer and Rails website, Kyle Holderfield. Kyle, how are you doing this evening?
Absolutely fantastic on this cold, rainy October evening.
Well, there you go. Kyle is checking in from Lafayette. He is actually an assistant football coach at, tell us all about it, Kyle.
Harrison High School.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, we are. We're 6-1 on the year, going for a conference championship this coming week against Travis Miller's alma mater, Kokomo. Oh,
better take them down. But what position do you coach? What is your role on the team?
Wide receivers, JV, head coach, passing game coordinator, sports information director. We can just stop there with the roles.
Okay.
Recruiting person.
Basically, the reason I'm asking you this is for those who don't read everything you put on the site or who maybe, haven't followed you since you've joined the site, to give you kind of an update and a background of what Kyle knows about football. And obviously, it is more than what myself or Casey know about football. So we wanted to bring him on because Casey and I have kind of been saying the same things about what we think about Jeff Brom's performance throughout the year. But I think it's good to have another take come in. We don't know if Kyle's going to agree with our thoughts or not, but I wanted to bring him on and get his opinion as someone who coaches football. Obviously, he doesn't get paid $5 to $6 million like Jeff Brom. But we thought his opinion would be worthwhile.
I could do the same job as Jeff Brom for half the same.
Well, that's off to a good start then, how we're going to look at it. So, before we get too deep into the Purdue loss to Minnesota, I do have a question for both of you. How are you celebrating today's holiday?
Say what now?
How are you celebrating today's holiday?
What is this going to be, a dork thing?
No, this is the Mean Girls movie reference.
Hey, Kyle gets it.
Yeah,
today's,
I'm married.
Today's October 3rd, National Mean Girls Day.
I mean, I'm a mean girl every day.
There you go. That's all you need. So that was the question. There's no real follow-up. I just wanted to make sure everyone out there knows we're recording this on October 3rd. National Mean Girls Day. So go ahead, watch Mean Girls. You won't be upset about it. It's a fantastic. All right. Now, that out of the way, Purdue obviously lost in a disappointing game on Saturday to the Minnesota Golden Gophers in a game that was quite winnable. They lost 20-13. This is now the third game in a row that Purdue has managed only 13 points on offense. They are, of course, 1-2 in those last three games. And for those keeping track at home, that means Casey was correct on his prediction and I was incorrect. So Casey is now 5-0 in predictions and I am 4-1. So he has bragging rights over me. Now, I want to get into kind of our general thoughts of the game. But before we do that, I want to go over some stats because there were a lot of question marks going into the game. Aiden O'Connell played the whole game at quarterback, other than a few snaps to Austin Burton, where they were all runs. Aiden O'Connell was 34 of 52, 371 yards, one touchdown, one interception, but he also had one fumble that was lost, so he did account for two turnovers. David Bell did play in the game, six receptions, 120 yards. No touchdowns. King Doru came back. He apparently is a listener to the podcast because he heard me say that I did not think he would turn Purdue into a running team if he came back. However, he proved me wrong. 21 carries, 95 yards, average of 4.5. And he looked really good out there. Offensive line actually opened up some holes for him. So the run game was much improved. We wound up, granted, with only 77 total running yards, because O'Connell lost 44 because of those four sacks he took. But, I will take 95 from Doru. So with that out of the way, Kyle, I want kind of your impression on what you thought of the offensive game plan from Jeff Brom.
Yeah, first of all, the dumbest stat in football is taking away rushing yards for quarterback sacks. I hate that statistic.
Yeah, it is unfair to the run game, I feel like.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's just a terrible, terrible statistic. It should be, I think, in my opinion, its own. We still threw the ball 52 times, and without taking the quarterback runs that were sacked by Aiden O'Connell, we ran it 30 in a game where it was completely a torrential downpour. And I think I said it to you guys in the group chat, like, since Jeff Brom's been in West Lafayette, I think he's 1-5 in rain game at Ross-Ade Stadium. The one, I think, being week one of this year is a little, it wasn't like it was this past weekend, but it was it was muddy and messy where we beat Oregon State. And I mean, maybe if we have Xander Horvath, it's more 50-50, but the fact that we have this quarterback that's quite frankly a statue in the pocket in comparison to our other quarterbacks, and we're dropping him back to pass 52 times in the game where he can't scramble at all because, one, he doesn't have the ability to, and two, it's a wet and messy game. I think is a disservice, and King Daru averaged 4.5 yards per carry, and he probably, in my opinion, should have been closer to 30 carries to control the game. But the real problem is the red scoring.
Absolutely.
Settling for field goals, where I think we've had now 21 trips to the red zone and only 8 of them have ended in touchdowns this year. Probably mostly all against University of Connecticut.
Yeah. Well, when you throw up 49 points against one of the worst teams in college football, that is really going to help your stats.
Absolutely. Yeah. Outside of the UConn game, if we take the UConn game off of our stats, our offense is averaging 17 points per game, which you're not going to win many college football games doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with when you just look at numbers, and that Connecticut game really is inflating everything that we've done and kind of holding us up to probably unreasonable expectations for what we can expect from this offense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a super limited offense. There's not, outside of David Bell, I mean, who's your playmaker? I mean, the tight end Payne Durham, he's hurt right now, but he had a bad case of the drops beforehand anyway. You know, we don't stick to a run game, so we don't have a dominant running back that we can just lean on. Milton Wright drops too many passes, and TJ Sheffield and Jackson Anthrop don't catch the ball deeper than 5 yards down.
Milton Wright got better in rain.
That's what, like, I was about to say.
We might need to wet his ball every pass.
It's true. He took his gloves off. So
that's not a phrase I thought I was going to say today.
Yeah, no kidding. We're just going to glow right past that one. I don't want to harp too much on the offense without at least giving the defense credit, because they did hold Minnesota to 20 points, and you would hope if you hire a guy who's touted as an offensive guru, an offensive genius, and an offensive mind, a quarterback whisperer, any number of things that Jeff Brohm has been called throughout his career, you would think if he can put together a defense that can hold a team to 20 points, you're going to walk away with a victory most times. So I want to give full credit to the defense, because they have been carrying the load this season, and they've been putting up games that we didn't expect from them when we went into this season, and they've put Purdue's offense in a position to win these games, and Purdue just simply hasn't been able to take advantage of it. So I mean, Purdue had, granted, you know, we're not really seeming to rack up the sacks that we would expect given the talent on the defensive line. There were 2 tackles for loss, 3 quarterback hurries. They put a lot of pressure on the quarterback and made him uncomfortable. You know, they did their job on the offense or on the defensive line. So I again want to just point out that the defense is doing enough to win games, but the offense is just not taking advantage.
I think there's something like 12th in the nation in points per game allowed right now, which, yeah, again, like you just said, you hire a guy like Jeff Brohm who's hangs his hat on offense, and he finally has this defensive staff, his best defensive staff and defensive team since his first year, and he is not doing much with it on the other side of the ball, and that he needs to take a long look in the mirror, you know, and decide if maybe he should hand over the play calling duties. I'm in complete honesty, maybe he should just be the head football coach.
And I mean, that's kind of the frustration. We have a defense, something I don't think we expected coming into. So, of course, it's time to change quarterbacks into the guy who is more prone to take risks and turn the ball over.
Mm-hmm. I guess.
I'm being sarcastic.
I know. You're putting the defense in a really bad spot. I mean, it's, my God, they've bailed out Aiden O'Connell so many times. I think he has 5 interceptions in the year and a couple of fumbles. And, I mean, I don't know what Jack Plummer did other than he didn't. The play calling is much more limited when Jack Plummer's in. We don't stretch the field nearly as much. And I have no idea why that is. But, hell, before the Notre Dame game, NBC was talking about him as a rising player in college football.
Yeah. So as someone who, you know, coaches a football team both from a position coach perspective as well as a head coach perspective, when you are calling the plays, how much does that take away from everything else you're doing as the head coach?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's apples to oranges, I guess, because it's completely different levels, right? But,
yeah,
you know, yeah, I completely understand. But, like, just it's hard, man. It's hard. You got to have somebody You got to have really good coordinators on the other side of the ball. And he has, I mean, he has three obviously pretty good co-defensive coordinators because they're doing a hell of a job. So I think that relieves a little bit of pressure this year. But, you know, I don't know why he's falling so short on offense, especially in short yardage in the red zone. Like, we just can't figure out short yardage in the red zone. And yes, it takes away from a lot. And it probably takes away from a little bit of chemistry a little bit. He probably doesn't know the defensive players as well, et cetera, and things like that.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Because, I mean, I know that's something that Casey brought up, I believe it was last week, saying that maybe it's time for Jeff Brohm to give up the play calling duties. And we, of course, mentioned that last season, Brohm missed those first two games, and his brother Brian Brohm called the plays in those first two games. And, of course, Purdue came out of those games 2-0. And then after that, lost, you know, the rest of the games during the season. Obviously, you can't say they're connected one-to-one, but, you know, when you see something like that and you notice a change in the offense from those games versus the ones Jeff Brohm has called, you have to wonder if maybe a change would help the offense kind of kick into high gear a little bit more.
I think it adds a different perspective. I think that Coach Brohm has, you know, kind of got zoned in on this certain play style. And, you know, when Brian called the plays last year, we were almost 50-50 in pass to run. Since Coach Brohm's called plays and since he's been in West Lafayette, I think they put a statistic on the television a few weeks back. We're second only to Washington State, and 65% of the time we're passing the ball. That's pretty easy to scout. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we get too deep into anything else, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and keep going after this Purdue versus Minnesota game. All right. And we are back. So one of the things that kind of caused controversy while watching the game was Minnesota's first touchdown. It was a kind of a pass to the corner, well, to the front edge of the end zone. Minnesota receiver hauled it in, but then it did not look like he kept possession as he went to the ground. And as we all know, with all the reviews we've seen and all the changes to the rules, you do have to keep possession as you go to the ground, especially obviously in the end zone. It did not look to some of us like he kept that. There was no review called for. But we, you know, assume, as they told us year after year, they review all scoring plays. So someone was looking at it and determined that it was a touchdown. But Kyle, did you think it was a catch and a touchdown?
It was a drop. You can see it in the replay that
touchdown.
It was not a touchdown, in my opinion.
Okay.
It was a drop, and he did not have clear possession all the way to the turf, as they say in the rules 1,000 times.
Yeah, it just, I don't know what it is with Purdue and Minnesota, but there always seems to be something a little fishy that goes on with the officials in these games. I mean, last year, of course, it was that phantom pass interference on us. This year, it's this catch that didn't really seem like a catch. So, I mean, and both of them wiped away touchdown. Well, Purdue had a touchdown wiped away last year, and then this year, Minnesota gets a touchdown, 7-point difference in the game. So it's just, you hate to blame the officials. You hate to have your team put it in a position where one play can make such a big difference. But you feel like when a mistake like that gets made, it really bothers you when it goes against your team, because 7 points in a game where a team only scores 20 is a hell of a difference. So it's frustrating to see.
Absolutely. I mean, they say football is a game of inches, and, you know, there you go. There's a prime example of it. They gave 7 points. Could have been 13-13 late in the game. My real question is what the heck are the Purdue defensive coaches up in the box looking at? Because I know they get instant replay right in front of them to not call down on the headset and tell Coach Brohm to challenge it, right? You get one challenge in college football.
Yeah, I wondered about that as well. I mean, it was fairly early in the game. I mean, maybe they thought it's too close. Maybe we need to save it. But, I mean, how often has Purdue actually used their challenge?
I can't remember a time that Jeff Brohm has thrown a challenge flag. I honestly can't.
And it's a scoring play from far away.
Right. It's a scoring play.
You challenge it.
And your offense is struggling. I mean, I think you got to. So I don't know. Maybe they told him, hey, coach, you might want to throw the flag. And he said, no. Probably different words, but no.
Well, right. Yeah, I would love to see somebody ask that question in maybe the upcoming press conference that he's going to hold, as he does every week after the game, to kind of discuss what went right, what went wrong, and look ahead. With obviously the bye week coming up, they may kind of change the schedule on when they do that. But that is something that I'd like to hear an answer on how that decision went and if they did think about challenging it. So there's that. We here at the Hammer and Rails podcast do not think that was a touchdown. Our opinion, however, does not matter. So it was still a loss, 20-13. Now, before we go, one other thing, Casey wanted to point out his thoughts on the quarterback play. So I'm going to push away from the table and allow Casey to talk about how he thought Aiden O'Connell played.
Well, I'll start it off with pretty much a tweet I made, which is a perfect tweet.
Some people did like that tweet. Some people did not like that tweet from you.
Well, I'm going to say a different one than the one people got. Coach Brohm has two quarterbacks, one who is too conservative, one is too aggressive. And I'm not sure we've seen any improvement in either in the other direction. Brohm's supposed to be a QB guru. Coach him. Stop yanking him back and forth. Coach each one or whichever one's playing to be better and more of what you... That said, everyone who is on the AOC train, all we heard about for the first four games, those interceptions he threw weren't... The majority of them were not his. Those same people are the ones that are trying to ignore the four or five passes he made against Minnesota that should have been interceptions. He ended the game on a terribly thrown interception that was not needed. It was second down. There was play time on the clock. We were in scoring and he just chucked it up. We have seen him be a gunslinger, and we have seen it bite him in the ass, and not as much as it should. There were four or five lofted balls that should have been caught by Minnesota that would have taken this game entirely out of him. And this just kind of seems to be the thread with. He is going to challenge in the middle of the field where the most amount of bodies are. Has he been decent with it? He's been okay. Like, he makes more plays, but he is making the kind of negative plays that a team that's not as good, we're not good enough to make up negative plays. He sits in the pocket too long, takes sacks. I mean, he took us out of field goal range by trying to pretend he's Lamar Jackson running back and forward.
I don't know what he was doing on most of those sacks. I mean, you can't blame the offensive line for a lot of those sacks. I mean, he had the time. He could have thrown the ball away, and instead he's running around back there knowing he's not the most mobile guy, trying to make a play, and he ends up, I mean, like we said earlier, he lost 44 yards on those four sacks.
Yeah, so, and it comes down, we saw on the first sack where he lost the fumble, he got back, he finished his drop, scanned the field, and then the rush that came right at his face, that ball's got to be out of his hand, and he has to hold on. That fumble and sack entirely on him. And then the play when he was moving around, did a good job of getting away from the initial pressure, got outside the pocket, you throw the ball away. You're in scoring position, it's the end of the half, you throw the ball away, it's not a hard decision. Instead, he ends up losing about, 22 yards, and all of a sudden we can't kick a field goal, and that changes the entire, we would have been down one, guaranteeing that no matter what we did, no matter what Minnesota did on offense, we would only be one possession down. Plays like that, we have too good of a defense that's been playing too good, too shaky of an offense to play someone that is going to put us in that kind of negative situation.
I mean, you are right that a lot of people were in our mentions and even in the comments of the recent post we put on there about the podcast, saying that we are too hard on AOC and we're not hard enough on Plummer, and Plummer doesn't make plays, but AOC makes plays. So if this offense is going to reach its potential, we have to rely on O'Connell because he's the one who's willing to take the risk. And I agree, there is some truth to that, because this offense has seemed lackadaisical, has seemed like they just can't get the ball in the end zone. As Kyle was talking about earlier, we get into the red zone and then for whatever reason, the play calling changes, the execution changes, we just can't get the ball in the end zone. But when you're a team that is averaging over the last three games 13 points, your quarterback cannot turn the ball over two times a game. You can't waste possessions like that. And especially that last possession, I know it's a high, you know, pressure situation, but turning the ball over like that as you're trying to go down to tie the game is just, I mean, it's excruciating to watch. And it's not the first time he's done that.
No.
I've never seen a walk-on quarterback have such a leash. I watched Jeff Brohm pull Elijah Sindelar and David Blau out of a game back and forth every other gosh darn series for 2 years. And now we have this fifth-year walk-on quarterback that is a statue in the pocket. And I'm sure he was a great kid, and I'm sure they love his story. He only had an offer from some Division II school. They found him in the mud. But my God, I've never seen somebody with such a long leash. And Jack Plummer has thrown zero interceptions.
17.
That's, that, That's my thing. He gets pulled of the Notre Dame game, which I'm going to harp on this entire season, because he took some hits. Well, guess what, Jeff? He's a quarterback, and you have a shit offensive line.
After scoring the touchdown.
He should have left Aiden O'Connell in there for the duration of that game if he wanted to see a quarterback take some hits, because he wouldn't have evaded any.
Like, you don't take your starting quarterback out, who is healthy, because he's taking hits when you're only down a touchdown to a top-ranked team. I don't get it. And then people were shitting on us in the comments again because we're like, oh, Plummer's not some delicate flower that you have to treat, blah, blah, blah. Okay, guess what? He is a big-time athlete, and sometimes their psyches can be very fragile. So you got to understand what you're doing with them when you're pulling them in and out of games or whatever you're doing can impact them and impact how they play. That's just the reality of the situation. And Brom's got to understand that.
Yeah, I mean, all the playmakers were gone for Illinois. What was Plummer supposed to do? Every play, every pass he made, Milton Wright dropped against him.
Yeah, I mean, he had no David Bell. He had no Payne Durham. He had no King Doru. He had no Alexander Horvath. I mean, what's he going to do?
I would bet a lot of money that we will see Jack Plummer in the transfer portal at the end of the year. That's all I'm saying.
We called that last week.
That's the same thing.
Yeah. Why would you stick around? Wisconsin would take him tomorrow.
You can leave and be immediately eligible and not be jerked around somewhere. I mean, that's just what it comes. And maybe AOC leaves and maybe he thinks that it's his job. But you know, quite frankly, if I was him, I mean, I wouldn't. My head football coach doesn't trust me after three games. I threw seven touchdowns and zero interceptions. I mean,
and he was doing. I mean, he was winning football games.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know what more Plummer can do. I don't know if – I would imagine O'Connell's probably going to be the starter from here on out unless, I mean, something goes wrong, because he does seem to be the quarterback that Brom has more faith in. He seems to be the quarterback that Brom has wanted. And now he's the quarterback he's got, and he's got to ride him.
So here's my question. He keeps speaking, which is weird. He's like, our coaching staff is divided. What is the chance that it's Jeff Brom for AOC and literally every other coach?
It's pretty high. I'm going to guess that the Broms are both AOC, because Brian Brom started AOC over Jack Plummer the season opener last year against Iowa.
Well, but do you think that was Brian Brom's choice? Because, I mean, even though Jeff Brom was still, you know, he had COVID, he was out for those games. I mean, it was probably still his choice as
that's
far
true.
As the chart, wouldn't it have been?
I bet Jamarcus Sheppard is pro a quarterback that can extend plays and make plays downfield. But that's just me, because he wants his receivers to make.
But I don't know. It's very frustrating. Because, I mean, as I've said before on this podcast, you know, Casey and I are just, you know, jackasses who sit around and watch football and get paid to talk about it and write about it. And we're not great football minds, but there are some things that we see and we're like, I'm not an idiot, right? I'm seeing this. And the guy who makes $5 million should see this. So you just always wonder, am I overconfident? Know what's going on. I really don't, but I don't know. It's very frustrating to watch at times.
We'll see Jack Plummer again, because Aiden O'Connell will take a bunch of hits against good defenses here in the next few weeks.
I hear when you take some hits, that's when you get benched. So
apparently so.
We'll see if that same logic applies going forward. I think that's about gonna do it here for this week's podcast. As I mentioned, there is no game next week. It is a bye week for Purdue. Hopefully it gives the team a chance to rest. The dog who's chewing to relax, and then you know we'll be back after that. But we will continue to record next week, even though we don't have a game. We'll see if we can get you some exciting Purdue news.
Basketball's coming up real soon, Ledman. We're going to be about a month out.
Basketball started practice, so we can do a little basketball talk. Maybe get Casey's positive attitude back on the podcast. I know you all miss it, so. That is going to be it for us. No recommendation this week. It's time for me to go watch my Buccaneers play football on Sunday night. So for Kyle, for Casey, and for myself, thank you for listening. Enjoy the bye week, and let's get them next week, you know? Let's go out there and just see what happens. All right, boiler up.
Boiler mid. Help, help,